Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon, Crusaders. I'm Celeste Youngblood coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Monday, January 8th, 2018. Iraqis are being forced to return to their homes despite remaining danger. The Trump administration is allowing fracking waste to be dumped into the Gulf of Mexico. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. What does the Surgeon General see as America's most pressing health issue? Already the world's biggest arms exporter, the U.S. is seeking to increase arms sales. And spotlight on the Vatican's former chief Latinist. With the war against the Islamic State being largely behind them, Iraqis are struggling to survive amid the rubble to which their lands and lives were reduced. Now the Iraqi military is forcing displaced citizens to return to their homes in unsafe areas to ensure that May elections will take place. Courtesy of Reuters.
Fierce clashes between Iraq's military and Islamic State. Now Mahdi Ahmed's daughter-in-law is dead, and his son and granddaughter are injured after they were told it was safe to return home. Refugees and aid workers say the Iraqi military is forcibly returning displaced people to unsafe areas in the predominantly Sunni Anbar province, exposing them to deadly traps and vigilantes, allegedly to ensure that an election takes place on time.
My son was given a tent by the government and went back before us. While he was trying to pitch it in a yard, after being told that it was safe there, an explosion went off. His wife was killed instantly and he lost one eye, while the other needs several operations. His daughter was also seriously wounded.
More than 2 million Iraqis were displaced by the war against Islamic State. Now that war is over, Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi is riding a wave of popular support. But critics say he is more interested in winning elections in May than returning displaced Iraqis home safely. Iraqis must be in their area of origin in order to vote, and if they have not returned home, this could delay the polls.
They're doing this because of the elections. They want people to go back to vote. But if I go back and see my house destroyed, my money gone, and my life ruined, why would I vote for them?
Mahdi's case is not unique. Aid workers at camps in Anbar province tell Reuters military trucks arrive at camps unannounced, and commanders read lists of people who have 1 hour to pack their belongings and go. They estimate that between 2,400 and 5,000 people were forcibly returned in the past 2.5 months. An Iraqi military spokesman said claims the military forced civilians to go home were an exaggeration. But, he said, citizens have to go home now that Islamic State has been defeated.
Lord have mercy. The Syrian city of Idlib was the scene of an explosion which took the lives of at least 23 people and injured dozens more. Reuters' Gillian Kitchener reports.
Rescue teams worked quickly to recover bodies from the rubble after an explosion in Syria's northwestern city of Idlib on Sunday. A war monitor reported at least 23 people died and dozens more were injured, including civilians. According to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, the explosion targeted the headquarters of a rebel group. The nature of the attack was not immediately clear, but there were conflicting reports of a car bomb or a drone attack. Idlib province is a stronghold of rebels in Syria on the border with Turkey, one of the main backers of a revolt against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Do you live near the Gulf of Mexico? Enjoy seafood from the Gulf? The Independent reported a few weeks ago that there are new lawsuits which are challenging the Trump administration's decision to permit fracking waste dumping in the Gulf of Mexico. When Kristen Monsell, senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, announced the filing of a notice of intent against the Environmental Protection Agency, she said, quote, "The Trump administration is letting the oil industry turn our oceans into toxic waste dumps. The EPA's supposed to protect water quality, not help pollute the Gulf." RT's Mike Papantonio spoke with Farron Cousins, executive editor for the Trial Lawyer magazine, about this issue yesterday.
The Trump administration is once again being sued by environmental groups, this time over their decision to allow fracking companies to dump their toxic waste into the Gulf of Mexico. It's poison. Joining me now to talk about this is Farron Cousins, executive editor for Trial Lawyer magazine. Farron, you've written extensively about the BP disaster. And so it's not like we don't have enough poison in the Gulf of Mexico. On top of that, you've got the entire Mississippi sludge coming in from all over the United States. You've got that area around oil refineries. We're polluted. There's an area as big as Arizona that's polluted in the Gulf of Mexico so bad that they call it the dead zone. But now these boneheads want to say, hey, dump your fracking material in.
Well, you know, we've already got a point right now in the United States, in the Gulf of Mexico. 75 billion tons of oil company waste going into the Gulf of Mexico every year before this fracking decision was even made. You know, that doesn't include the dead zone. So now we're talking about adding more to it. And the problem with the fracking chemicals, and that's the basis of this lawsuit, one, we don't know what they are. We do not know what is in these fracking chemicals. We know there's diesel fuel. We know there's other carcinogens. But every kind of chemical compound mixture per fracking company is different. And the lawsuit says, look, this is going to have untold consequences on marine life, on the economic livelihoods of those of us on the Gulf Coast. It's a recipe for disaster, and this administration does not seem to care one
bit. It's not just this administration. It is this administration, but the last administration was not much better on this topic, if we're going to be honest about it. They really weren't much better on this. Look, we don't know everything that's in it, but we know it will set water on fire.
Right.
The tap water coming out of a tap, you can strike a match, and the fracking material will set the water on fire. How bad could this be?
This could be the end of the Gulf of Mexico as we know it. When you combine it with everything else that's happening, with the BP oil spill, which is 7.5 years ago, but there's still tar balls and tar mats all over the floor. When you look at the dead zone that's getting bigger every single year, when you look at the 75 billion tons of waste already out there, to add fracking chemicals to it, that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back here. I mean, we can't poison and poison and poison these waters anymore and just assume that the marine life is somehow going to evolve to accept this. There's going to come a point where we're going to poison it so much there's no coming back. And I'm afraid that with these fracking chemicals, considering it's 600 plus different chemicals per frack site, this could be the end of it.
Yeah. And again, it's all a mystery. We have no studies to know what the latent effect of this is.
Right.
Farron, thank you for joining me.
And now it's time for your business and market report. It is said that the world markets are experiencing their best start in 8 years. Reuters' Ciara Lee has more.
A fresh start and the best new year in 8 years for global stock markets. European shares hitting a two-year high. Strong global growth and low inflation continue to power the appetite for risk. Europe's car sector was in top gear first thing. The region's auto index hitting its highest since 2015. Italian-American Fiat Chrysler rose 2.2%, and France's Peugeot and Germany's BMW were up 1.6% and 1.4% respectively.
Calibration of the auto sector to economic recovery is pretty unequivocal.
Fresh deal-making also helped. Novo Nordisk inched up after the Danish drug maker said it had made a 2.6 billion euro bid for Belgian biotech group Ablynx. And oil prices stabilised close to last week's three-year highs following days of tensions in Iran.
You know, the oil price strength that we've seen over the last couple of months or so is not based on these geopolitical up flares and upsurges. It is based on the fact that supply cuts are working, a better reading of the situation with respect to oversupply and particularly shale, and an uptick in demand I would expect as well, given the fact that we're saying that the global economy is on a good foot for the moment.
Wall Street had already enjoyed its best start to a year in more than a decade. And this week, attention is on the quarterly earnings season, with some predicting growth of around 10%.
Got a moderated view, but we're prepared to be surprised to the upside again. I think that's quite possible.
Asian shares also crept towards all-time peaks. MSCI's index of Asia-Pacific shares outside Japan added 0.2%, having climbed over 3% last week.
Japanese citizens are known for, to put it mildly, their persistent work ethic. There is even a word in the Japanese language, karoshi, for death resulting from overwork. Japan has been putting in overtime trying to encourage their citizens to tone down their working hours. One Tokyo-based IT company started putting purple capes on employees who worked overtime on the third Wednesday of the month. The tactic was developed not by the bosses, but was the result of the bosses asking their employees what they thought would be a good deterrent to working overtime. These bosses had just attended a training course given by the organization Work-Life Balance. Yoshi Kimuro, founder of Work-Life Balance, told NBC News that the purple cape stigma was successful, helping to cut the company's overtime hours in half. Three other companies announced that they are developing a drone which will fly around the workplace after working hours, playing a song, presumably Auld Lang Syne, which will encourage employees to go home. In a country which attributed 191 deaths in a calendar year to overworking, in which 8% of the workforce works over 60 hours a week, it may take some time yet before the association between employee worth and number of working hours is diminished. In other news, the Associated Press reported that the Pope's message to the world on the Feast of the Epiphany included a call not to make one's career and riches the entire focus of one's life. He said, quote, "Some stars may be bright, but do not point the way. So it is with success, money, career, honors, and pleasures, when these become our lives." Now let's see what the stock market is doing today. In late morning trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 25 points at 25,271. The NASDAQ was up 13 points at 7,150. The S&P 500 was holding steady at 2,744. Crude oil was up 6 cents at $61.50 a barrel. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed up 210 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed up 85. Near closing, the London FTSE 100 was down 28 points and the DAX in Germany was up 48. Today's quote of the day comes from St. Pio of Pietrelcina. Jesus is with you, even when you don't feel his presence. He is never so close to you as he is during your spiritual battles. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Thorfinn. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, when I was a kid, being called a bookworm was an insult of the highest order. Today, people want to be called bookworm to solve the world's political problems. At the Founders Trading Post, we have the books you need to help solve the world's problems and save your soul, too. From Humility of Heart to Patrick Henry, American Statesman, get started on your bookworm bona fides today by browsing to mikechurch.com/books. Most of our books are also signed by the authors. Shop like a Jeopardy champion today at mikechurch.com/books or call 844-5-CRUSADE.
St. Thorfinn is one of those saints who was very popular in his time, but about whom not too much is currently known. He was Norwegian, possibly from Trondheim, and it is thought he might have been a Cistercian monk before being named Bishop of Hamar. His episcopacy fell during the reign of King Eric, dubbed priest-hater. Needless to say, he did not see eye to eye with the king, especially when the king repudiated an agreement made between a previous king and Archbishop John Raud of Nidaros, an agreement which confirmed clerical privileges, freedom of episcopal elections, and other such concerns. Archbishop Raud and his supporters, Bishop Andres of Oslo and Bishop Thorfinn, were exiled from Norway. Thorfinn, who was said by a fellow monk to have been mild-mannered yet firm-willed, ended up at the Abbey of Ter Dust near Bruges and died there in 1285. Saint Thorfinn, pray for us. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams spoke with Fox News' Chris Wallace yesterday about what he sees as the nation's most pressing health issues.
Healthcare is one of the most divisive political issues in our country. But one man here in Washington is all about ratcheting down the debate and working for solutions. Here is our Power Player of the Week.
I think of the role of the Surgeon General as being one who leads with the science, who promotes health and prevents disease.
Dr. Jerome Adams is the country's 20th Surgeon General.
Where are we covering in the United States?
In charge of the 6,500 officers of the Public Health Service. But more important, he is the nation's doctor.
In the 60s, Luther Terry warned about the danger of smoking. In the 80s, C. Everett Koop fought political opposition to inform the country about AIDS.
Let's stop the rumors and misinformation about AIDS.
Sometimes in your job, science bumps up against politics. How do you balance those?
Science has got to be the key for the Surgeon General. But there's a saying, Chris, people need to know that you care before they care what you know.
Adams believes instead of a zero-sum game where one side wins and the other loses, public health is about building partnerships on climate change.
We know the science says that man is having an impact on the climate, but we also know that people are dying from not having jobs, from not being able to feed their families.
Whether gun violence is a public health issue.
Gun control, I think, in and of itself, is a term that turns people off. I'm interested as the Surgeon General in gun safety.
But the most pressing problem now is the opioid crisis. 91 people a day dying from overdoses. The nation's life expectancy declining for the second year in a row. Back in October, President Trump declared it a public health emergency.
We will defeat this opioid epidemic. It will be defeated.
But so far, the Trump administration has not kept its promise to ask Congress for more funding.
Drug addiction is personal for you. Your brother is in prison.
My younger brother, Philip, suffers from addiction. It's painful to share, but it helps people understand that if this can happen to the Surgeon General and his brother, it can happen to anybody.
So help me God.
Vice President Pence appointed Adams as Indiana's health commissioner when he was governor.
It was Dr. Jerome Adams who led from the front.
And he saw how the doctor dealt with an outbreak of HIV in a deeply conservative rural county.
Needle exchange programs are extremely politically controversial.
But Adams convinced the law enforcement and business communities
that we cared about the same things that they cared about resolving this epidemic, and share with them how the science could lead to that outcome.
So Dr. Adams may sometimes have to walk a tightrope in his job, but he says always in pursuit of the greater good.
For my entire life, I've tried to use the gifts that God gave me to improve health for individuals. And I get excited each and every day that I get to come to work and feel like I had a small impact in improving the health of this country.
Dr. Adams is now working on a Surgeon General's report on the link between public health and a stronger economy.
The United States is already the world's biggest arms exporter, but the Trump administration is cutting regulations to increase the sales of U.S.-made weaponry overseas. Reuters reports.
President Donald Trump intends to drive a government-wide effort to open new foreign markets to U.S.-made weapons and military equipment. Sources tell Reuters that Trump intends to sign a, quote, National Security Decision Directive and a, quote, arms transfer initiative in February to add language that sharpens the State Department's focus on advocating the economic benefits of an arms sale. Reuters' Mike Stone.
A lot of partners in NATO, outside of NATO, and U.S. allies around the world, they have always been hungry to get their hands on some of the equipment that the U.S. arms makers make. This would increase the number of jobs in the United States. It would increase the amount of exports that the United States has, therefore decreasing the export deficit that the United States is currently running.
The plan will ease export rules and order U.S. military attachés and diplomats around the world to act as a veritable sales force for these companies. Even though the U.S. is already the world's biggest arms exporter, the country exported nearly $42 billion worth of weaponry to foreign buyers in 2017.
So, someone at the State Department, someone at the Pentagon, someone evaluating a potential foreign military sale is going to not only have to take into account the human rights record of the country that they'd be selling it into, but also whether or not that sale would be good for Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, Raytheon, many of the largest and most prolific arms makers in the United States of America.
Officials and industry executives point to China's drone sales to United Arab Emirates and Jordan as examples of how regulation have choked U.S. exports. And while efforts to expand arms exports are not new, Trump's language will go further than President Obama's 2014 policy that sought to, quote, promote U.S. sales to make it easier to work with allies.
Father Reginald Foster was the chief Latin translator at the Vatican for over 40 years. Not content to simply work with documents, he sought to make a difference in the lives of others by teaching Latin, his way, with an emphasis on Latin as a spoken language. Courtesy of CBS News, here is a spotlight on Father Reginald Foster.
It's a rare sound these days, a Roman Catholic Mass said in Latin. The language was once at the heart of Western culture. For centuries, most books and official letters were written in Latin.
Today, it is considered a dead language, except to those who are trying to resurrect it. Brooke Silva Braga is here with one man's efforts to keep Latin alive. Brooke, good morning.
Good morning. Well, one estimate puts the number of truly fluent Latin speakers in the world at just 100 people. But one man has made it his life's work to save the language from extinction. And where he's doing it is as unlikely as how he's doing it.
I want to start with 1633.
In the basement of a nursing home in Milwaukee, the world's best Latin lessons are given for free.
Nearby.
In the middle of the table, that's Father Reginald Foster.
You're going to have to do this sooner or later.
A priest who lacks patience.
Sit down and shut up.
A teacher who dominates his classroom.
You better be awake.
The man who has managed to convince hundreds of people to dedicate their lives to a language no longer living.
His passion is what drives us. He's like the rock star of the Latin world. So it's just great to be in his orbit.
Why are you so good at Latin? Is it just the time you put in?
You see what I'm sitting on? My butt? You sit on your butt and study Latin as long as I have. You'll be a master, too.
It just seems too hard.
No. Every poor person, derelict, prostitute, anyone else in Rome spoke Latin.
If they could do it.
Well, if they can do it. And I also say, when the Romans said to their dogs, they had pets, come here, sit down, and eat your dinner. Veni hoc, concede, ad genam tuam, sume. And take your dinner in Latin. Well, the dog picked it up.
As a young man, Foster, the son of a Milwaukee plumber, became a priest in Rome with a knack for the language, and in 1970 got a call from the Vatican. They wanted him to translate Latin for the Pope. For the next 40 years, he wrote speeches and letters in the names of four popes.
Pretend that you're the Pope. What would you say? I said, well, I have some ideas.
One of Foster's ideas was rejecting the trappings of the church. Instead of a priest's habit, he dressed like a working man. Instead of a mattress, he slept on the floor. His Latin was so good, the church tolerated Foster, but the high-profile job didn't quite satisfy him.
Because what we were doing upstairs in the office was useless. No one's reading those letters. So I said, I want to do something useful. Teach them Latin in my way.
His way meant scrapping the traditional method of memorizing tables of text and instead treating Latin as a living spoken language. It was a radical departure in approach.
Something out of the world of fantasy, a monk in Rome speaking Latin.
Jason Pettacone had studied Latin by rote, but never heard anyone speak it out loud.
He has scores of students who've become Latin teachers, several who've become Ivy League professors. That has affected a change on the culture of the way Latin is taught.
Foster would still be teaching and translating at the Vatican if a bad fall hadn't landed him in a wheelchair, just as an appearance in Bill Maher's 2008 documentary Religious landed him in hot water with the church.
When you look at a building like that, a giant palace, does it seem at odds with the message of the founder?
Well, certainly.
But does it bother you?
Well, I mean, yes, it does.
Yeah, but
I mean,
I wouldn't,
if I were the boss, I wouldn't be living there.
Foster was flown home to Milwaukee, never to return to Rome.
The third chapter are these sentences.
Now, 78, he's working on textbooks to share his method.
There I am, 19 years old.
But is devoid of sentiment. We asked if he had photos of his life, and he said he'd thrown them all in a dumpster years ago. Luckily, a neighbor climbed in and saved them.
Why would you throw all this out? This is the history of your life.
I'm never going to look at that again. And it's gone. Past. Finished. Over with. Done. Forgotten. Goodbye. Ciao, ciao.
Except it isn't, really.
Quasi sostitiali serba paulis per fui.
Foster's old students not only carried on the Latin summer classes in Rome, Jason Pettacone's nonprofit, the Paideia Institute, now brings Latin into underserved American classrooms, helping these kids' English vocabularies in the process.
Wait, guys, wait.
And on a recent Saturday, high school students swept through New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art for a Latin scavenger hunt. The Gospel of Father Reginald Foster is winning converts.
How long have you been studying now?
557 days.
So she won't forget, Grace Milliman wrote the date on her shoes in Roman numerals.
September 2nd, 2016, and I walked into that classroom and, like, my entire life changed.
People say it's a dead language.
It's roaming around. It's not dead.
You were ready for that.
I am always ready for that.
This is so fun.
Seeing a young person that excited, even if he doesn't want to admit it, I think would make Reginald really, really happy. And I think that in her, he will live on and the tradition will live on.
Latin is easy if it's taught right.
That's what you've tried to change.
I am changing. I'm going down to teach right now.
And Foster is willing to teach anyone who shows up in Milwaukee. No experience needed. His method is also taught in a London summer program, and his second book in that five-volume series is now headed to the printing press, and he says he has no plans to stop teaching.
Amazing.
Tempus fugit carpe diem.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
I know he said even a dog could learn it, but I took it all the way through high school, and it was
and
murder.
He
says people are learning it the wrong way.
I think he's probably right.
In this Celestial Musings, last night was the Golden Globes. Do we even care? I certainly didn't. I hear the women wore black to make a statement against sexual harassment. How nice. I think they should have started donning black decades ago, when filmmaking and television deviated from decent, family-friendly storytelling and became a tool whose purpose largely is to acclimate the culture to ever-weakening morals and societal depravity and shock factor. Who takes these people seriously? Year after year, they put out, with few exceptions, very little that I'd wish my children or myself to see, and they pat themselves on the back and award their supposed awesomeness. They've spent decades creating the climate and nurturing the attitudes which precipitated this sexual harassment morass they find themselves in. You know, the one they all knew about yet said nothing about for so long. But now they want us to know they stand for decency. Yeah, they do. I'll believe it when TV and film return to such a quality that we no longer need to atone for its effects any longer. And as a final note, the Crusade News Desk is blowing up with suggestions that Oprah Winfrey should now run for president in 2020, this based on the speech that she gave at the Golden Globes last night. Even Meryl Streep has given her endorsement. That settles it for me. Not. Haven't we tried this? How's it working out for us? And how long do we want to exist as a reality TV nation? Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. For more news headlines, follow me at my Twitter handle, @CrusadeNewscast. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for king-sized truth from radio-sized speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your News Talk and Saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.